Happy Saturday morning, everybody. Welcome into the Michelle Knezovic Show. I'm Michelle Knezovic, joined with Jared Cassidy behind the board today. We've got you covered for the next hour on all things sports here in Nashville, taking a look around the whole country, too, talking a little national headlines as well. Hope you're enjoying your Saturday morning. You've got your coffee. It's a beautiful day here in Nashville. Jared, how are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. This is the second edition of the Knezovic Show. And listen, our first edition 1 week ago today, we saw the Philip Forsberg news finally unfold and a bow was finally tied, and he officially will be a Nashville Predator for the next 8 years. It was a long time coming. We'd been talking about his contract for about 6 months, but really, I mean, it started at around this time last year, and everybody's got to preview that contract season, and it's no surprise Philip Forsberg had quite the season this past year, and the Predators have locked him down for 8 more years. $8.25 million each year. So I think Forsberg's pretty happy about that. I think both sides, people talk about who won, right? Who won the negotiations? Because David Poyle at the end of it said that, you know, pretty much it just came down to the money aspect of things. They figured out the no trade clause and all of the other logistics of the contract, but who was going to fold first for the money? And they ended up at 8.25. Predators fans, we said this last week when the news was unfolding. You got to be pretty happy that you have locked down Philip Forsberg for the next 8 years. But the conversation has continued to, okay, well, now that you are sure that you have Philip Forsberg, what else does this team need to do in the offseason to make sure you got better heading into this season? And a lot of people look at this Philip Forsberg trade, and you need to remember that with signing Philip Forsberg, you had him last year. So the way that I look at it, Jared, is that you didn't get better, but you didn't get worse by locking Philip Forsberg down.
Right.
So you essentially stayed the same, but a move that I do think made the Predators better, switching to defense, was the addition of Ryan McDonagh. And I feel like it kind of got, I don't want to say swift under the radar because of all the Philip Forsberg noise. And when they signed Ryan McDonagh, it was before Philip Forsberg re-signed with the Predators. So it wasn't, once Philip Forsberg re-signed, that was all the headlines and everything like that, because that was has been just such a story for a long time. But I think that this Ryan McDonagh addition coming from the Tampa Bay Lightning, he's won 2 Stanley Cups, and he just made it to the Stanley Cup Finals. And Tampa Bay, you know, they release their injury reports after the series is over and the Avs won it all. And it was like Ryan McDonagh's finger was mangled or something like that. Like, that just shows the tough, gritty guy that this Predators team is getting. Yeah, he's a little bit older, but, I mean, Tampa wouldn't have released him if it wasn't for that he was just a cap casualty and they had to pay younger guys and other guys on the team. They would have kept him if it weren't for the salary cap, which we know is the name of the game.
Yeah, he was definitely a cap casualty for them. I think, to your first point of what you said about getting better, we definitely got better on defense, though.
100%.
For sure.
I completely agree.
Yeah, which was one of the biggest faults in my eyes and for a lot of people around here, too, was that our defense just seemed to lack a little bit. I think now adding him, you definitely have some room to kind of mix the lines up, mm-hmm. which can provide, I mean, who knows what it could provide? You know, it could change a lot of things.
Well, I think it also helps, too, because you've got, obviously, Josi, you got Matthias Ekholm, and then Ryan McDonagh, right? So now you've got 3 solid, strong guys, and it allows, you know, Alex Carrier or Dante Fabro, those younger guys, not to have so much pressure and so much minutes just on them, right? So they already played a lot and got a lot of starting minutes this year, but it'll allow them, okay, to play in smaller increments, but also have that experience of playing in almost every game throughout an 80-game season. So I think if you look at defense, exactly what you said is they did get better. So now we are still in NHL free agency. The Preds did not make a move the first day, made some smaller moves, but I think what Predators fans are really looking for and what I think that the team just needs, you just need another top six forward. You need another piece on your offense, another guy who's going to be a scorer for this team. And Willie Donick on the DDC, you know, they had David Poile on, and they talked about what kind of player that he thinks might be good for this Predators team moving forward. Here's Willie Donick on the DDC earlier this week.
We talked to David Poile yesterday. He made it sound like they're looking for a short-term deal. Doesn't really have the budget with the salary cap, only going up $1 million this year and only going up $1 million next year, knowing that next year you got to deal with Tanner Jeannot's contract, Alex Carrier's contract, Dante Fabro's contract. There's not a lot of room for a long-term deal there in the cards. Now, after that, you are going to get some salary cap relief. So the world changes at that point. For the next couple of years, you're looking for maybe a one-year. I don't know if you could squeeze a second year in there, but I think you're looking for a veteran player.
So that was Willie Donick earlier this week on the DDC. Oh, I'm sorry, on the text line, somebody texted in. I said 8.25, $8.5 million for Philip Forsberg each year. Sorry, I misspoke there. So he is getting $8.5 million a year. But that was Willie Donick earlier this week on the DDC talking about what kind of player the Predators could get, but also noting that next year the Predators are going to have to worry about players like Tanner Jeannot, who we saw really emerge this year as a young guy on this team, and Alex Carrier. So they have to be mindful. They can't only look at the cap this year, but they also have to, you know, forecast or prepare for what is going to be hitting them next year. So that's kind of an update with the Nashville Predators right now. We like to do this thing. If you haven't listened to the show before, the Michelle Knezevic Show, this is our second edition this morning. And we like to do this thing called the Morning Brew. I tell everyone, you know, it's Saturday morning. Grab your coffee. If you're looking on the stream, driven by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, you can watch us streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. I've got my jug of coffee this morning. It's like a huge mason jar of coffee. So grab your coffee, whatever type of caffeine you like. And I'm going to go through all the headlines or big stories that are happening in the sports world right now. And if you're in Nashville, if you're anywhere listening, things that you should know, right? If you go to a bar and you want to spark a conversation, what is going on in the sports world? And just to help, you know, gain some knowledge, right? So right now we talked a little bit about the Nashville Predators. You talked about the Philip Forsberg. They've got him locked down for the next 8 years. We talked about what maybe the Predators could or should do in NHL free agency. What type of player, Willie, we just heard the soundbite from him, and what type of player that could be a good addition to this team, you know, maybe a veteran player on a short-term deal because of the other players' deals that you're going to have to pay next year. Now let's switch over to a little bit of college sports. SEC Media Day is going to be next week in Atlanta. I will be heading to Atlanta with Caroline Fenton, who is one of the co-hosts on Stillman & Company featuring Caroline Fenton. We will be road tripping down to Atlanta this year. It is not in Hoover, Alabama, which it traditionally is there. We're going down to Alabama, and we are fully in, you know, basically the home stretch until it's football until about February. And I cannot wait, Jared. I am so excited. This is my first SEC Media Day I'm covering, and Caroline's covered it before, but, you know, all the SEC coaches are going to be there. Greg Sankey, the commissioner, is going to be there. And there's three players from each team that are going to be there. We're going to be on Radio Row, hopefully getting some great interviews. I might have locked down a Nick Saban one, Kirby Smart, so fingers crossed on that, to be listening on our airwaves this week. We'll be sending interviews back. But one of the things I'm most interested to see and what people should be looking out for or listening for this week is Monday, at the beginning and the start of SEC Media Day, it'll be Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern time, so it'll be noon central here. Greg Sankey always does his, you know, state of the SEC. That's like the first thing. And this is really the first time he's like openly had, you know, a press conference speaking out since now the Big Ten has made moves to add other teams, UCLA and USC. So we saw the first two dominoes of Oklahoma and Texas being added to the SEC, and now we've seen the Big Ten add two more teams, USC and UCLA. So I think it's going to be interesting. I don't know why, but I have a little hunch that maybe we might find out something about the SEC moving forward. So keep an ear out, keep an eye out for that. Caroline Fenton and I will be on Twitter, all on the digital platforms. We'll also be sending interviews back to all of our shows to get the latest on SEC football. And then right after that, heading into Titans training camp. I mean, if you're talking about the big stories, or if you're a Titans fan, like what you need to know heading into training camp or what you need to look out for. What I'm looking out for is, I know you've heard some offseason stories during rookie minicamp, Treylon Burks, the Titans' first-round draft pick, the wide receiver out of Arkansas. Woo-soo piggy. I love saying that every time I say Arkansas, but he's a guy who couldn't really see on the field during rookie minicamp. We found out that he had asthma, a lot of speculations that he wasn't in shape, and that's why he wasn't on the field. And with the trade of A.J. Brown going to the Eagles to get Treylon Burks high in the first round, there is going to be a lot of pressure on him in training camp. All eyes are going to be on him, especially with these last couple weeks off. Was he in the gym? Was he making sure to, you know, get ready, especially for the heat of this training camp? If you're in Nashville right now, you know that it's been unbearable outside. And for these guys to go full force into training camp and essentially have no breaks all the way up until week one, it is going to be pretty intense. So a lot of eyes are going to be on him, and a lot of eyes are also going to be on the other rookie, Malik Willis. How is he performing alongside Ryan Tannehill? We all saw the national headlines about Ryan Tannehill's comments on the mentorship, which I personally think got blown out of proportion, but also a lot of eyes are going to be on Ryan Tannehill. I mean, Titans fans aren't too happy about how the way last season ended with the loss against the Cincinnati Bengals. So a lot of eyes on the quarterback room and a lot of eyes on the wide receiver room, especially without A.J. Brown there. You got the addition of Robert Woods and Treylon Burks. And then tight end, you also got Austin Hooper. So a lot of new faces for Ryan Tannehill out there. So those are a couple of your headlines in the Nashville sports world. That was your morning brew. And we're going to get a little bit deeper into the SEC Media Day coming up this week on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Michelle Knezovic Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in the Michelle Knezovic Show. I'm Michelle Knezovic. Jared Cassidy getting me dancing over here with that music. Excited on this Saturday morning. And you want to know why I'm excited? I am excited because on Monday, I will be driving to Atlanta with Caroline Fenton, who co-hosts our afternoon show. You want to know why, Jared? Because that means SEC Football Day, or SEC Media Days is here, which means SEC football. We are finally July 16th. We are almost there. I know we're only like halfway through the summer, but it means football is almost back, and that just gets me so excited. We're in SEC country, and there really is nothing better than SEC football. I'm going to go to our text line really quick. Rob in Clarksville showing some love to the show. Thank you, Rob. Our text line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If you want to text in, if you want to call in, I'd love chatting with some callers. Yeah, 615-737-1025. We will be on the air every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m., and maybe we'll sprinkle in a second hour once SEC football is finally underway. So, like I said, we're in SEC country right now, and I always look at SEC Media Days as, you know, the Super Bowl of the summer. That's the way I look at it, because in the summer months, we're always, and especially in sports talk radio, we're always kind of, you know, fiending for content because there's always, I mean, it's just It's off season. Point blank, it's off season. So you hear your Mount Rushmores of basically every sports topic you can think of. But this year we've actually had quite a bit going on in Nashville, especially with, you know, we talked about in the segment before, the Predators locking down Philip Forsberg, off season with Ryan Tannehill, Treylon Burks with the Tennessee Titans, but the SEC as well. I mean, we've just seen a lot of changes within the last year, year and a half in college football as a whole. We saw the NIL finally get passed and players be able to monetize after off of their name, image, and likeness, which is a huge change. And I think that that almost catapulted into what we're kind of seeing now in these super conferences. So we know that we have our Power Five conferences, obviously, but within the last year and as of recent with the Big Ten and the addition of UCLA and USC, and we saw not too long ago, Oklahoma and Texas will be joining the SEC. These two conferences have set themselves apart, right? So you've seen the SEC and the Big Ten kind of just separate themselves from the rest of the pack. And with college football, you know, just about a month away, a little bit over a month away in SEC Media Days, I talked about how Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, always does a, you know, state of the conference. And I think a lot of it on Monday is going to be, you know, are we going to see, I mean, I know if there's questions being asked and I can ask one, are we going to see, you know, in the near future, other schools being added to the SEC? Have other schools already reached out about, you know, trying to join the SEC? And is this like just the turning point? Like, are we going to see some conferences just fold? And, you know, Jared, as you're a huge Tennessee fan, which we beef a little bit because we all know if you listen to our radio station, I went to Kentucky. But it's okay. It's a fun rivalry, and that's what makes, you know, the SEC so unique. And I was kind of thinking about SEC football in general and what makes it so special. And a lot of people have grown up in it, right? So you've always been from Tennessee. You grew up a Falls fan, right, yeah, Jared? So
right.
I'm from New York, and not New York City, but upstate New York. And the difference in colleges and just, you know, love for the sport is so incredibly different. And I grew up, you know, we have state schools, but they're, you know, they're Division III. I guess you could say, I mean, we don't have anything even close. You have Syracuse, but the love for it, the passion for it, it's not there. And when I went to Kentucky as a freshman and experienced, you know, SEC culture, and listen, this was in 2015 when Kentucky football, you know, they're not known for football. And it didn't matter on Saturdays. It is an entirely different culture and just different way of life. Growing up, it's like, and I met a lot of friends who were from Lexington, and they're like, oh no, every Saturday. Like Saturdays in the fall, nothing other than that. And if you have I love to hear everybody's SEC story. So if you have like why college football means so much to you, if you grew up in the SEC, you know, text us in, call us in, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. But they're so special because you don't have, and I think that's, you know, the one kind of flaw or something that hurts Vanderbilt a little bit is having them be in a city like Nashville, because you have the Nashville Predators, you have the Tennessee Titans, you have these professional sports teams. Also, you're also competing for fans, and just the success of Vanderbilt football, you know, over the years, that also hurts them too. But kind of all three of those. But you look at a Lexington, Kentucky, no pro sports there, right? You look at Alabama football is your professional football team down there.
That's it. That's all they got.
You look at Knoxville, right? Tennessee. You look at Gainesville, Florida, right? People live in these towns, and these towns survive because you have SEC sports. So I have a fear of, and I'm sure other people do who've just grown up in the SEC, that, you know, making it this super conference, yeah, I mean, the money and the revenue will be great. But I think we're just going to see college sports change even more because they're going to be in these cities. Like, we just don't know which schools are going to be added. I've heard, you know, some talk about Baylor being added, which I could see be a fit. I've seen some chatter about getting another Florida school in there. But, you know, do you think, Jared, we could be seeing, you know, just the demise of what we think the SEC used to be, just as far as a, you know, tradition and love of the game and exclusivity of these are the schools that are in it?
Yeah, because, I mean, they've moved and done a lot, you know, recently. Like when Missouri and Texas A&M yep. came into the SEC, like that was a big change. I mean, I was younger. I mean, I was still, you know, not like 10 or anything, but just seeing those, like growing up with the tradition of all these SEC schools and teams and stuff and colleges, just like seeing just Missouri and Texas A&M just come strolling in, and then they moved them into the conference with Tennessee, and that was a big thing. I do think this is just the start, obviously.
Yep.
It could go good, could go bad. But I just think that we are going to see some more shakeups. I do think that eventually the SEC will add some more schools. I couldn't even begin to tell you what they would be. The only thing is like the in-state school rivalries to me have a big deal. Like,
I agree.
Like Vandy, Tennessee. Yeah, it's not really quite a big rivalry, but it is a state
tradition.
Right, and the tradition, and it's a state in-state battle. You know, like Ole Miss, Mississippi State, like those games are good. Like Texas A&M, even though it's not SEC yet, that's a good battle. Like those state schools that play each other, that to me is like, that's sports. You know, that's college football. And the only thing that worries that is that, like, if we start adding teams to these conferences, we're not going to get a lot of like movement because your schedule is going to be set in stone. And a lot of it already is right now, but it's going to get even more hectic.
Well, and from a personal standpoint, you know, my eyes go towards Kentucky Louisville, which is huge.
Yeah, another good one.
Huge every year and honestly, every sport. But right there, Louisville's in the ACC, and I don't know what's going to happen with the ACC. Are those schools all going to scatter out as well? And, like, could we see a Louisville go to a Big Ten, which would be very strange? But, I mean, if you were to tell me this a year ago, I would say you are absolutely crazy and look at you with 10 heads. But could we be seeing this become essentially, I mean, it's not the NFL. No, nothing can be the NFL. But could we be seeing a Big Ten and an SEC and then essentially nothing else is relevant, which I know is could be drastic to say, but I don't think it's too far-fetched, especially with seeing, you know, are the Pac-12 and the Big 12 going to combine because those two have lost prominent schools?
Right. Man, I would just hate to see it because I love the Pac-12 after dark. Like, that is one of my guilty pleasures in life is watching that. When I used to work the overnight shift, I would come in and the start of that game would be like halftime. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, right? You got sports you could watch.
Yep, all night.
I mean, heading over to our text line really quick, we got a texter in. Love talking some SEC football. Okay, no-name texter, but it says the SEC should add Clemson and Florida State. So I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and I threw out Clemson too, that they could be, you know, an addition to the SEC. I think they could be a good fit. You know, you look at location-wise, which I really don't think location is going to have any sort yeah. of matter, you know.
Geography is just completely
thrown out the door.
Yeah, just like a bad banana peel, just toss it on the road.
Yeah, geography has just been thrown out the door at this point. But, I mean, if you still want to play that as a factor, yeah, I think Clemson would be, you know, great. You still got that in-state rivalry of them in South Carolina, which would be hopefully still saved. But then you look at it, too, as you look at conference schedules, right? So we talk about this model, and hopefully we get some more clarity on what a model could look like heading into SEC Media Days this Monday of are they going to do, you know, are they going to expand the playoff? Are they going to have these pods, they said, where you play maybe four teams every year and then the other teams are kind of on a rotation base. So, like you said, you will lose some of those rivalries. And although, you know, if for the in-state people here, the Tennessee Vols, right? As of recent, it hasn't been much of a rivalry between them and Alabama. But in years past, people grew up with them in Florida and, you know, Steve Spurrier and
The third Saturday in October was when we played Alabama.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the generation now might not be able to see that rivalry or wasn't alive to remember that rivalry, but it's in the roots of the game and it's been there. If you have any thoughts on, you know, the SEC football, college football moving forward, the Big Ten adding teams, text us, weigh in on the conversation, or call us 615-737-1025. You can also watch us streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, talking a lot of college football and what the future of it could look like as SEC Media Day will be this Monday. Myself and Caroline Fenton from the station will be down there with all of your coverage. We're going to talk a little bit more on the other side of what could a regular season look like with the SEC expanding and maybe some other teams that we could see added to the Big Ten. You're listening to the Michelle Knezevic Show on 102.5, 106.3, and on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in the Michelle Knezevic Show. I'm Michelle Knezevic, joined by Jared Cassidy, talking a lot of SEC football as in 2 days, I'll be heading down to Atlanta with Caroline Fenton, who co-hosts our afternoon show. SEC Media Days is finally here, which means college football is finally back.
It's back, baby.
It is back. We finally have got out of the slow season of sports, and I could not be more excited covering SEC football, and especially heading down this year. It's in Atlanta. All the coaches are going to be there. Greg Sankey is going to be there. Three players from each team are going to be there. So I feel like, you know, we're not quite, but almost fully out of COVID in a sense of sporting, right? Stadiums are full. Press conferences are full. Training camp for the Titans is going to be, you know, no media restrictions. So we're finally able to get, I love those in-person interviews, and Caroline and I will be on Radio Row. So hopefully we'll be able to grab some SEC coaches. We'll be doing coverage from there all week long. Interviews we'll be sending back to the station, and we'll also be hosting a live show, kind of the, we're going to call it like the SEC wrap-up for the 6 o'clock hour following Silliman & Company starting on Monday. So we're going to have all your coverage for you down there in Atlanta this year. Actually, not in Hoover, Alabama. So going to be in Atlanta. But Jared, we talked about on the other side, and if you're just joining in and joining the conversation, feel free to text us, call us if you have any thoughts on, you know, college football as a whole and what kind of the picture looks like right now, the SEC and also the Big Ten. 615-737-1025, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. You can also watch us streaming. We're on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. I look all solo here in the studio. I look lonely in here, Jared.
Yeah, I'm definitely behind the glass.
Jared's making sure we're on the air, but feel free to watch us streaming Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, also Facebook, driven by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. But I want you to weigh in on the conversation as well. You know, what could the SEC look like as a whole, you know, heading into this season and then, you know, as far as 2025 and even past that, right? I think one of the big dominoes that fell, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, was NIL and players being able to get paid. I think that that, you know, was kind of the first domino, I guess you could say. And then everything after that is, you know, we see Texas and Oklahoma now going to be a part of the SEC, leaving the Big 12. And then we see USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12 and heading to the Big 10. And right now, we've never seen the NCAA weaker than it is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest flaws was when name, image, and likeness became legal and players could monetize off of their name, image, and likeness, the NCAA didn't have a plan. They didn't have a plan on how they would want to try and regulate it, how they would want to try to move forward and what they think this could look like. I mean, I almost feel like they were just stuck in their ways and never thought that this could essentially ever happen. And now we just see pretty much a free-for-all. They have no, I mean, like I said, we've never seen them weaker. They don't have much pull over, you know, college athletics, college football. And now we see these conferences taking charge and becoming super conferences in front of our eyes, Jared.
Yeah, they're not calling the shots anymore.
No.
Which I'm sure that they do not like.
No.
But I don't know. I mean, honestly, though, too, though, I mean, they've been the governing branch, right, of all college athletics. And that's fine. But when they rolled out this NIL deal, like, they, like you said, they just had no plan. They had no plan. They were kind of like, all right, you can do it. Go do it. And then that was it. And it was kind of like, we'll piece it together as we go. Well, that's good, but you know, it's going to hurt you in the long run, too. And that's going to be tough. I am curious this year, because this will be the second year at SEC Media Days of the NIL, and I think it's going to be a bigger topic than a lot of people think it will be.
Well, and I mean, just a couple weeks ago, everybody saw, or most people should have, you know, probably seen or heard, because it was all over Twitter, but the whole, you know, Nick Saban essentially calling out Texas A&M for the collective and having the number one recruiting class, and but also while doing it, trying to get donors to help Alabama out, and then Jimbo Fisher making a huge statement and essentially saying, you know, never, that they would ever do that. And it's become almost this, you know, back and forth battle of the collective. And yeah, they're not getting technically paid to play there, but we're seeing these collectives. And now that players are, it's not illegal to accept money, and there's definitely still some gray area in there. And you also need to realize that, yes, this was happening before, but now this is allowed to be a lot more public.
Yep.
And we're seeing, like, the Jimbo and Saban kind of confrontation, non-confrontation to each other just over social media and interview platforms. And it'll be interesting to see them both in person at SEC Media Day, and if a question will be brought up, which I can foresee a question brought up about the collective and payers getting played. But another aspect of NIL I kind of thought about a while back and how it could be kind of a conflict for schools is now these players are individuals and they're having sponsorships individually and representing brands on their own and not so much associated with the college. So you think of these big-time athletes, and a lot of actually women's basketball players have been getting huge deals. So you think of Paige Beckerts, who plays for UConn, and she's not only a huge brand in women's college basketball, but I don't want to say an influencer, but she has a huge social media following, and I think she signed with Gatorade, right? So think about Gatorade, a huge brand like that, or you think about Nike, or you think about Adidas. Okay, if you have a singular athlete go and sign with them or get an NIL deal with them, what if your school is like a Powerade school, or what if your school is an Adidas school? So how does that come into play of, you know, conflict of interest, or how do you set boundaries or rules on things like that? Because, I mean, the school can't say, oh, Jared, you can only have sponsors to X, Y, and Z companies. If you're a student and trying to do what's best for your – or you're an athlete and you're trying to do what's best for yourself, and you're like, well, this company is going to offer me six figures, and yes, players are making that, and some are making over millions.
Yeah, see, this is where it would kind of come into play is, like, I think that the school should have seniority over the player because you're playing for the name on the front instead of the name on the back of the jersey. And even though some of those schools don't put the names on the back of the jerseys, that's fine. Your name's still on there.
You're like, it's the principal.
Right.
It's a
they
principal.
They still know you as number two, you know?
Yes, like, exactly. Well, and you have a part of your, you know, likability, notoriety is that you play for Tennessee or you play for Kentucky and you are a local celebrity. So, no, I agree, but will we see those rules put into play? I feel like now I've seen even job postings from athletic departments of, you know, NIL coordinator. My former boss at Kentucky, TJ Beisner, he worked for the UK Sports Network. Now he is specifically on Coach Calipari's staff, just working with the players and NIL and making sure also that these players aren't taken advantage of.
Right.
And signing these contracts, and their contract, like, they're obligated in their contract to do X, Y, and Z, but they're also an 18-year-old kid. And, you know, when you're playing for an Alabama football or when you're playing for a Kentucky basketball, these high-level programs, people look at you with dollar signs, especially business men and women or somebody who's trying to get you to represent their brand. And I would want a lawyer or somebody, you know, to look over a contract or something like that, just to make sure, like, I'm not getting myself into anything. But listen, if you need the money and you need the money for your family or for anything else, sometimes that can get into a sticky situation. So at the end of the day, too, like, I agree with you. I think that school should trump, you know, the individual brand. But also, too, I think we're going to see a lot of maybe even departments of NIL and, you know, making sure to protect these players in what they're signing or what business deals they're getting into.
Right. We also had an example of this on a much bigger scale. This was back in the day, but Michael Jordan, when they went to the Olympics, and they were sponsored by Reebok, and obviously he is Nike.
Nike.
And, you know, what did he do? He just draped the flag over it, and they didn't like it. And that was a problem back then. Now, obviously, this is not college. You know, you're talking NBA still, but that caused a pretty big uproar. Just imagine if some of these schools, you know, is sponsored by somebody that's an opposing thing, like a Ferrari to a Mercedes.
Yeah.
You know, those two things, it's going to happen. And this is only the start.
We haven't even seen it scratch the surface, too, right? And you think about that whole Michael Jordan situation, and that was pre-social media.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And it would have blown up then, too. Oh, man. That would have been wild.
I know. I mean, you think of, you need to do something for 1 second, or you see, you know, a player wearing a shirt with you think of the logos, right? And how many times in press conferences, or I've worked in, you know, with schools, it's like, okay, you got to switch your shirt really quick, or you can't wear a shirt with a brand on it, or you got to make sure that you've got the Coca-Cola can or bottle right in front of you when you do the press conference. There's so many little things that need to be done, and you see it all the time, and you might not realize it, but when you kind of look into it, it's like, oh, that Coca-Cola can is there every single time.
Yep, well, dollar signs are everywhere.
Dollar signs are everywhere, right? Money makes the world go round, and it is very much making the college football world go round. Talking about, you know, what could college football look like this year? SEC Media Day is in Atlanta on Monday. What could the future of college football look like? Could we be seeing just two super conferences? Weigh in on the conversation. Text us, call us, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming into the last segment here on The Michelle Knezevic Show, you're listening to The Michelle Knezevic Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Gabe Nashville app. Welcome back in, last segment of the day. Welcome back into The Michelle Knezevic Show. I'm Michelle Knezevic, Jared Cassidy behind the glass. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game or the Gabe Nashville app. You can also watch us streaming on Twitch, Twitter, or YouTube. Heading into the final segment, a lot of what we've been talking about today, Jared, is college football, as SEC Media Days are just 2 days away. I'll be heading down with Caroline Fenton early on Monday morning. We'll be heading down to Atlanta this year. It is not in Hoover, so a little bit bigger of a city. All the big dogs will be in the house.
Just slightly bigger city.
Just slightly bigger city, you know. I've mentioned this a couple times throughout the show, but Greg Sankey will be making his, you know, State of the SEC starting on Monday morning. It'll be 11 a.m. Eastern time, 12 noon Central time here in Nashville. I think you're going to want to listen to that if you're a college football fan. I just have this feeling that we're going to find something else out, that another change is going to happen, whether we're going to find out about these, you know, pods in regular season for programs or college football playoff. I just feel like, or maybe another addition. I don't know what, yeah, but something.
I'm with you, though. I mean, if anything is going to happen, this would be the time, right? Like, it wouldn't be like, you know, 2 weeks before the season starts or anything like that. This would be the time to get out ahead of it, to kind of get a little bit of knowledge out there, figure out what you're going to do. Even if it's as simple as like, you know, hey, in the next 4 years, we want to add four teams. Okay, cool. That, if you give us that, that's at least something. You know, maybe we'll get something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think also, too, a lot of the interviews with the coaches and the players are going to be especially interesting this year because, like you mentioned before, we're another year down on players being able to monetize off of name, image, and likeness. At this point last year, it was still a big question mark on, okay, what is this going to look like? How are players going to do this? But now they've got like a year under their belt and they've seen how that they can do it and they can also play and it could all work together. I don't know if, I mean, I do think this year we're going to see more NIL deals just based off of, you know, people kind of understanding it, knowing how to go out and get them, people maybe, you know, beefing that into the recruiting aspect of things, which was happening before, but now it's definitely a little bit more public. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing a little Saban Jimbo action. Definitely looking forward to some Lane Kiffin pressers, some Mike Leach pressers. You know, they've always got the best one-liners. What are you looking forward to or want to hear or see from SEC Media Days? Text us or call us. We got about 10-ish minutes left in the show. Last segment here, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Or you can engage on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube on our live stream, driven by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. I think one of the biggest things I'm looking for heading into SEC Media Day, Jared, is essentially kind of like I talked about, you know, are we going to see another domino fall? Is Greg Sankey going to, you know, drop some news, drop something of what this is going to look like? And I think also, too, you know, hearing from coaches on these pods and if they go the route of a regular season will be kind of in this pod format, how do they feel about that, right? You think about guys like, you know, I know Alabama, like, for a long time has kind of been, it's just been on that upper echelon, and now Georgia's kind of up there, too. Those two really stand apart in the SEC. And nobody really has been able to compete with them. And they're kind of on their own level. But for a guy like Nick Saban, who's been coaching in college football for so long, and you still, those rivalries are still important.
Oh, yeah.
And what would a Tennessee, right? What would the four teams, you as a Tennessee fan, the four teams, or well, them, including them, for that they would play every year? What would you want to see? I mean, you have to play Vanderbilt. That's the in-state one.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. I've said for a while, I just don't see why we play Alabama every year. I get that it's history and it's tradition. I'm for that 100%. I just don't understand why we have to play them every year.
I agree.
You know, like LSU, we don't play LSU every year. We might play them every other year. You know, there's ways around it. If we add more people, it wouldn't necessarily have to play somebody every year, like a Tennessee, Alabama.
Yeah.
The hard part is it's a tradition and bordering states. Mm-hmm. Bordering states play a big deal in college football. Think about it. How many people like Austin Peay down in Clarksville, right? Like they play all these people, Vanderbilt, you know, MTSU, they play them all. They're in the same state. Well, then you go into the Kentucky. You got Louisville, Kentucky.
WKU.
Murray. Yeah. Like you got all of these people around here. So I don't know. I'm just kind of interested. I kind of want to see what they're going to say as far as, like, if they're going to take away some of these big-time rivalries, like the Texas-Oklahoma. Like, if they go to two different places, you know, like, how does this all work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Oklahoma-Oklahoma State. Like, how does that work out? Do you still play those people?
Well, and now Texas A&M and Texas will both be in the SEC, so would they be a lock to play each other every single year, which
you would think, right?
You would think, but I mean, Texas A&M would not want that.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim, they made it very clear, and we saw some, there were some rumors, like when Texas was getting added to the SEC, that Texas A&M did not like that because they wanted to be the Texas presence in the SEC. And we all know that Texas is just a little bit bigger than Texas A&M. So, and I look at it from, you know, a Kentucky fan standpoint, and I know that I'm not as familiar with the Tennessee rivalries, right? Because I never really followed Tennessee when I was younger or when they were big rivals with Florida and Alabama. But what I know of Tennessee, only really following them as of 2015, once I went to Kentucky, was we were hanging with them and no one was hanging with Alabama and no one was hanging with Georgia. And even Kentucky and Tennessee weren't hanging with Florida for a bit. I mean, I think Kentucky had their first win over Florida in like 35 years, and there's a program who has kind of a big question mark. But, I mean, I'd want to see a Kentucky play a Tennessee every year, a Missouri. Well, I wouldn't want to, but I feel like they would have to play a Missouri or a South Carolina and Florida. And then Florida's got to play Georgia, Tennessee. It's just hard. It's just hard because there's so many rivalries and games that you love to go to.
Right, and there's so many that have been played for such a long time. You know, like the world's largest cocktail party and stuff like that. You know, like all of those, that's why it's going to be so tough. The only thing is if they have more people, it could help them just because they can move a few more pieces around and you wouldn't have to play the same teams every year, but that could dilute the product.
Well, yeah, and then you think from a money standpoint, right? Tennessee fans, they're going to travel. If you're playing in Bama, heck yeah. Vols Nation is going to travel to the Alabama game. So ticket sales, TV contracts, right? Then you look at Alabama-Georgia game. People want them to play every year, even though they're going to play in the SEC championship game probably. But, hey, you get a 12-team playoff, then – I don't know. Who knows? I mean, that's the crazy thing. There's so many just ways it could go. I personally am for, you know, a bigger playoff because I think that it's become just, okay, Bama, Georgia every year. I mean, it was nice to see, college football playoff, but it would be nice to see, you know, some of those other Big Ten teams make it in there, right? We saw Cincinnati make it in there this year. I like that. I mean, that's one of the reasons college basketball is so appealing to me and everybody loves March Madness is because, right, it's
completely
a pool.
Random.
It's a pool, and you can see a St. Peter's beat Kentucky, but I know that that won't happen in football, but, you know, you expand it to 12 teams, we could be seeing, you know, not the same rotation of winners from year to year to year, not having a Clemson, Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, essentially exactly. The four locks. You can pretty much count your life on the four locks every year. So I personally am for a bigger playoff because from a fan perspective, taking my media cap off, actually even from a media perspective, right? It's more games. It's more potential upsets, right? It's more teams. It's more football at the end of the day.
Right. If the SEC does look to expand, I just hope that they choose. I mean, it's the SEC. They're going to choose quality over quantity. They're not going to get some nobody.
I want to be like, so Greg Sankey, who have you declined? Who has tried to get into the SEC and you just don't even give them the time of day?
Yeah.
Because you know, essentially, all these schools now are in survival mode of, oh, crap. Like, what are we going to do now? And you look at just the Pac-12, the Big 12, I think what would make most sense, I know we said we've thrown out the geography aspect of things, but they're kind of both on the west-ish over there, and could we see them combining with the loss of Texas and Oklahoma and then also USC, UCLA on the Pac-12 front? So just kind of a lot of things that could happen. Hopefully we'll be getting some updates on whether it be the expansion of the SEC, what the SEC could look like moving forward. So Only a couple more days, Jared.
Time will tell.
2 days away. Time will tell. Caroline Fenton and I will both be in Atlanta this week covering SEC Media Days. We'll have all your coverage on social media. We'll be sending interviews from Radio Row and even doing a live show in the 6 o'clock hour following Stillman and Company. This has been the second edition of the Michelle Knezovic Show. Jared Cassidy, I'm Michelle Knezovic. Tune in every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. I hope everybody has a great, safe rest of your weekend here in Nashville or wherever you're listening to. Have a great day, everyone. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, and the Game Nashville app.